Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. What I was sharing earlier was about meditation weekend number 14. All the great things that happened while we were down there in Jekyll Island. And I'm sure I'll say more about it. Hey, Holly. I'm sure I'll say more about it this coming Sunday when we're back in the theater. And surely by then I'll have all these glitches figured out. But anyway, we will back. I'm just going to save everything I'm going to say about the meditation weekend then, because while I've got a connection here, I just need to go ahead and thank you. Good to see you too. It's been quite a journey trying to get this connection tonight. So I'm just going to believe that all of these, it's the most delays I remember in 50 years of ministry. There's no way to even tell you all the obstacles. But anyway, we're on now. And I'm assuming that emergency, I just tried to take care of that as quick as I could. We will be in the theater this coming Sunday. We're in the theater first Sundays of every month now, and I'm very happy with that combination of doing the live stream like this and keeping the connection with the theater. Jonah, he's on tour right now. Jonah Swilly, he'll be back in town. He'll be doing music for us this coming Sunday, so I'm excited about that. And of course, we'll be back first Sunday of June, first Sunday of July. First Sunday of August, we'll be in St. Simon's. We'll be there for meditation weekend number 15. I think this is maybe the fourth time we've gone to St. Simon's. And last time we were there is when we had that amazing double rainbow that appeared. That was incredible. And I already have more people signed up for this one than I've ever had signed up this early. So it's going to be a great weekend. St. Simon's is magical. You can join the group. You don't have to ask for permission to join it. You just join it, and it's pretty self-explanatory. We'll also be celebrating Metron's 8th anniversary that day. So we've got a lot to look forward to. All right, look, I'm just going to get into this word because I've got the opportunity. I'm not going to do breath work or affirmations. Let's just get into it because I don't know. What, I don't even want to say it. I don't even want to say what else could possibly happen. Anyway, I speak into this atmosphere and I say, let there be light. Okay. I want to start with referring to the book of Job. I've talked about Job a good bit, and Job is actually, in my opinion, one of the most misinterpreted books of the Bible. It's actually the oldest. It was an ancient Jewish fable that predated Moses writing the Torah. So it's actually older than Genesis. It's not... I don't necessarily believe it was a literal occurrence. There was an actual Job, but this is it's an allegory about hey Henry, how you doing? It's an allegory of trying to make sense of why good things happen to bad people. And for most of you, this is a review, but let me just run you through this real quick. The first chapter. And again, this is like a fable. You say, Bishop, are you saying the Bible is fables? Yeah, a lot of the ancient fables from that part of the world got incorporated into Old Testament writing. That's just a fact. I'm not arguing with people about the inspiration of Scripture. They're inspired, but yes, they were lore. They were just part of the storytelling of that part of the world. And in the story of Job, it begins by God and Satan having like a weird sort of bet that they make over the life of Job. It says that one day the sons of God, it refers to Satan as the son of God, and he's they come before God, and God says to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, how that he's perfect?" And Satan retorts with, "Yeah, he's just perfect because his life is perfect. If you took all of his the perks away from him, he wouldn't serve you anymore." And so it's actually the most terrifying thing I've ever read, the idea that these two powers outside of your control are just playing poker with your life. It's a terrifying concept. But anyway, what God says to him is, all right, I'll tell you what, you can do anything you want to him except take his life, and we'll see. Which, the reason I don't want to believe this is a literal story is I don't want to think of a benevolent God actually saying something like that. Like if somebody came to me and said, "I think I could beat up your kids. I think I could beat up your boys," and if I said to them, "I don't think you can. Why don't you go for it and just try to beat the living crap out of them, but you can't kill them?" I mean, it would be my responsibility to say, "No, I don't want you to beat them up. Like, don't do that." But anyway, God and Satan enter into this agreement. And so for the next 40 chapters, we see this horrible story unfold with all of Job's children are killed, his adult children are killed. He loses all of his life. He was a very wealthy man. He loses all of his wealth. He gets struck with a terrible disease. His wife turns on him and finally says to him, "Why don't you just curse God and die?" And Job has these three friends who come to him, and they're trying to help him make sense of what's going on with him, and they seem to make matters worse. The only indication that Job takes any responsibility for what's happening to him himself is in chapter 3 when he says, "The thing that I feared came upon me." But finally, by about, I think it's chapter 39, chapter 40, somewhere in there, God finally comes to Job in a whirlwind, and they begin to talk back and forth, and God says things to him like, "I will tell you to deck yourself with majesty and command me, and I will swear to you that your own right hand can save you." And so basically what God is saying to him is Job, I didn't do this and Satan didn't do this. You did this. I mean, Job is really the ultimate humanist manifesto, because if you read it without religious bias, it's basically saying you're God and you're the devil. Or you could say it this way: your thoughts are God, or your thoughts are the devil. I don't have time to argue with you about the existence of God. If this is problematic with you, just move on somewhere else. I don't have time to explain it to you. I'm just telling you, when Jesus, in the fourth chapter of Matthew, when he went to the Mount of Temptation, when you look at the original language that he was speaking, he clearly was talking to his own thoughts. He referred to his thoughts as Satana. He cast down his own thoughts. He wasn't speaking to a disembodied spirit outside of him. But in Aramaic, especially in the Koboris manuscript, it's very clear that he's dealing with the spiritual warfare is the thoughts in his head. And I've talked all about this before, how that, you know, as long as you think there are forces outside of you that are calling the shots, you're never going to be able to take responsibility for your life and all that sort of thing. I'm not doing away with the concept of a higher power. I always want to keep my Jesus take the wheel card. But I also know there's something to taking responsibility for your life that's very important, very empowering, and is really what Job is about. Basically, you could sum up the book of Job with him saying, you've got the power, okay? Bam. Thank you for that bam, Greg Grantham. I needed it. Anyway, I've talked about that before, but I want to show you a little something different that I don't usually bring out in this. And it's in chapter 42. There's 42 chapters in Job, which, by the way, Job, in the even if you take the story literally, the hardship that he went through was just a very small part of his life. If you read the book in its entirety, it says that Job, after this period was over with, had doubled back everything that he had lost, and he lived out a lifespan of 100. Hey, Constance, good to see you. He lived back a full life to 140 years, and it says that his latter was greater than his former. Which there's a whole other teaching about that, that if you can weather the storm, it's kind of the concept of the broken bone that heals, and when it heals, it's stronger than it was before the break. But I don't want to get sidetracked on that. But what's interesting, and here's where I'm going with this today. In Job chapter 42, verse 10, it says, "The Lord turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friends." When he prayed for his friends. Now, I want to suggest something to you. I don't think this is about prayer. I think he's talking about something else. He's talking about the prayer is metaphor for when he got his eyes off of, why is this happening to me? When he got his eyes off of woe is me, and God invested in somebody else's situation and prayed for them, that's when everything turned around for him. As long as he was saying, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? He just kept spiraling downward. But once he prayed for his friends, it's symbolic of him getting outside of himself. Now, two things I want to share to give you some backstory. One is, the thing that happened at the Oscars a few weeks ago when Will Smith walked up on the stage and slapped Chris Rock. And, you know, there's, good Lord, people have been arguing about that more than they've argued about the war in Ukraine or politics or whatever. I don't want to get into that drama with you, but I do want to point out when I was listening, and I'm been a Will Smith fan for years, wanted him to win the Oscar. When I saw King Richard months ago, I wrote I have a movie review blog, and I wrote then, I said, he's overdue for an Oscar. This should be his Oscar winning performance. And so I was all for that. And would also like to say, no matter how they ultimately deal with him in discipline, I don't think they should revoke his Oscar. That's a slippery slope. You start doing that, you're going to start taking a bunch of people's Oscars back. So however else that's negatively going to affect him, that's a side issue. His performance was Oscar worthy, okay? But here's my point. A few minutes after the thing happened, he won best actor for King Richard. It's the story of Venus and Serena Williams' father and how he trained them to play tennis. And seriously, looks like there's a band coming to set up now. Well, that's just great. If it is, I'll move a little bit. I'm not cutting this off. Looks like there's a band about to set up out here. Anyway, I'm just going to keep talking as long as I can. So in his acceptance speech, when he got up there, he said, it was amazing how he somehow blamed both God and the devil for his actions. He said, and he was emotional, and it's very compelling speech, but he says, I'm being called by God to protect people. So he's basically saying, this wasn't about me, this is about God calling me to protect people, which, I don't know that anybody needed that kind of protection, but whatever. Hang on, let me see what they're about to do that. No, I'm just going to move right over here, just in case these people are about to set up. Okay, I'm going to keep going. So, in the very next breath, after saying God is basically, this is the call of God on my life that made me smack the whatever out of Chris Rock. In virtually the next breath, he says, Denzel came up to me and said, the devil's going to come in at your finest hour. So I thought, wow, that's a brilliant piece of taking all personal responsibility off yourself. He gets up there and he says, this is not me. It is either or both God and the devil. If you have, they're leaving. Thank you, Jesus. Oh, okay. So glad I didn't. Hang on. Find my spot again. There we are. Good. Whoever prayed the band away, thank you, because they turned around and moved. And so when I heard that speech, I was, first of all, I was still in shock at what I saw. And then I thought, wow, that reminds me of so much of my spiritual background, of people never taking personal responsibility. Everything's either God or the devil or both. I thought, Will Smith, that was brilliant. You in one acceptance speech took the onus completely off of yourself, and you've got two scapegoats, two in your mind superpowers that are calling the shots on your actions. So it just reminded me of this whole thing about Job, when God comes to Job out of the whirlwind and says, stop looking to something outside of yourself to fix this. And when chapter 42:10 says he prayed for his friends, to me, it's not about prayer as much as it is about a paradigm shift. In other words, I'm not going to be obsessed with my suffering. I'm going to invest in looking at somebody else. And that's going to turn the captivity. As long as I'm trying to, I mean, I could, if I really wanted to take this to the nth degree, I would say praying for yourself nonstop is nearly counterproductive. Because when you're only praying for yourself, your needs, your situation, and not ever praying for anybody else, all you're doing is drawing, you know, the universe, or however you believe in God, or whatever your belief system is. If I say the universe isn't making a judgment call on what you're praying for as much as it is you're spending this much time thinking about it. So it's like, if you're praying to get energy, you're sending out is communicating to the universe that you're obsessed with debt. And so what it does, instead of fixing the problem, it actually exacerbates the problem. And so here's the other thing that I wanted to share, and I've shared this with several people, and I think it may be lost on some people why this was such a big deal to me. But let me just tell you, in my building, I'm on my roof right now. It's a very quiet building. I never hear my neighbors all the years I've lived here. They're quiet, professional people. But there's a couple that lives next door to me, and I've never met them. We say hello in the hall, but they have a lot of problems in their relationship, and they fight a lot, and they fight late at night, and they fight really, really loud. He especially is a very large man with a booming voice, and I can't believe how long their battles go on. I mean, you know, sometimes I've got my AirPods in, and I take them out. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Good God, they're still going at it. I mean, they've been fighting since 7 o'clock. And I don't want to call the concierge, because I don't want to be a Karen that's calling, you know, and complaining about the loud black people next door to me. I don't want to do that. If your name's Karen, don't be offended. You know what I'm talking about. The Karen, which represents entitled white women that call the cops on black people having barbecues. But I don't want to get into that. I don't want to get in their business. A couple of times I've been on the elevator with her, and I've wanted to say, look, this is none of my business, but are you okay? Because it sounds like stuff's breaking over there. I mean, it sounds like a war zone. And it got to where it was really oppressing me. I mean, it's not just obnoxious noise. I could put up with somebody hearing somebody's stereo too loud. But when you're hearing strife and screaming and swearing, it just brings this oppression on you. But, you know, my loft is a sanctuary. I don't like bringing that negative stuff in there. So I complained a lot about it. Ken hears it some when he's here on the weekends. But it just occurred to me a couple of weeks ago. I thought, I need to pray for these people. I've never prayed for them. I've complained about it, but I haven't prayed about it. So it was no big deal. I just stretched my hand toward where their unit is. Actually went over and laid my hands on the wall. And I said, I don't know the names of these people, but whoever they are, whatever is going on with them, please help them resolve it. Please help them communicate better. Whatever the points are that's causing so much strife with them, help them get it resolved. And I just believe I receive it when I pray. And that was all. There was no speaking in tongues. There was no fasting. It was just that simple thing. But in doing that, I took the energy away from these people are making noise, which is aggravating me, and I turned it to there are two people living just a few feet away from me that clearly have got some issues going on, and I should send this energy to them. I'm not praying to a God up on a throne that he's going to get up and go fix it. I'm sending the energy out laterally, horizontally. Prayer goes from person to person, okay? Since that night, now this may just be temporary, I'm just telling you, since that night, immediately, they've been so quiet that at one point I thought they must have moved. I mean, you could hear a pin drop. And last week, early in the week, I was coming out of our parking garage, and they were walking. They walked by holding hands, and when they got in front of my car, I motioned for them to go on in front of me. They didn't drop hands. They both looked at me and smiled and kept holding hands and walked on. Now you say, Bishop, don't you pray for people all the time? Yes, and this is my point. I rarely pray for people that are affecting my personal world. Do you understand? I pray for people every day. My day is filled with people texting, messaging me, saying, you know, please pray. I'm constantly doing prayer emojis. It's not that I'm not interested, especially with people who are close to me, but that is job related. Do you understand? Those aren't situations that are directly affecting my life. I have a relationship with you, so if you say, pray for my mother, I pray for your mother because I have a relationship with you. Understand? This, however, was a situation that was affecting my personal world. And so the Lord turned my captivity when I prayed for my neighbors. A New Testament counterpart to that is out of James chapter 5, and it's in verse 16 where he says, confess your faults one to another and pray for one another, listen, that you may be healed. I'm going to say this again. Confess your faults one to another and pray for one another that you may be healed. Do you understand? Listen, not pray for one another that they may be healed. That sounds logical. Yeah, pray for people so they'll get healed. No. You pray for people because there's something in it for you. Confess your faults one to another and pray for another that you may be healed. In other words, when you get outside of yourself and start sending the energy, letting those rivers of living water flow out of your belly to other people, it turns the situation around. Yeah, they're going to get something out of the prayer, but the prayer is really about you. It's the same principle when I teach on forgiveness. I say you forgive people not because they deserve it. You do it for your own sake. When you forgive somebody else, you set yourself free. It's not about them. You can say, well, what they did was unforgivable. That's beside the point. You forgive people for your own sake. And by the same token, you pray for people for your own sake. Yes, you may literally actually care about what's going on with them, but there's something in it for you, especially if you're spiraling downward and becoming too self-absorbed with what's going on in your life. I've seen this happen all through my ministry. Every time I've thought about quitting or when I was overwhelmed, it's like God or whoever would bring somebody to me that I had to minister to. And it would be at the times I least felt like ministering to somebody. But in my ministering to them, it changed the energy on what was going on in my personal life. I mean, I used to practice this principle enough. I didn't do it if I thought I was contagious. But back in the day, I don't really get sick that much. But back in the day, when I used to get sick, I would go to church and preach on healing. And a lot of times, if I didn't think what I had was contagious, I'd have a healing line and pray for people. And it would work every time. When I was praying for other people's healing, I would walk out and I would be healed. It's a principle that's at work all the time. All those things like blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy, and forgive and you shall be forgiven. All of those, Jesus was constantly talking about these spiritual laws, and this is one of them. Now, I want to share this with you. You know the supermodel Naomi Campbell? She has a quote, and I'm not saying this is absolutely true. When I use a quote, I'm using it as a point of reference. I'm not saying it's the gospel. But I came across this quote the other day. She said, if you have to talk to more than three people about the same problem, you don't want help, you want attention. If you have to talk to more than three people about the same problem, you don't want help, you want attention. Now, I don't know if that's true. I can't say that's absolutely true. But there's something in that that resonates with me. Because I think about the problems that I've talked about to people over and over again, people who had no power to do anything about it, and wondered why I feel so bad when I leave that conversation, because all I've done, if I do that, is make my situation worse. And again, I'm not saying that, you know, sometimes you talk to more than three people because you're really legitimately looking for an answer. But maybe it is because you're so addicted to a negative feeling that you don't want to be free of it as much as you maybe profess that you do. I remember when I saw Dr. Joe Dispenza, he's right across the park here, 2-3 years ago, and he was talking about breaking the addiction of negative feelings, and he says sometimes you think you want a situation to change, but you've had it for so long that you don't feel like yourself without that. It's like Psalm 124, when it said, when the Lord turned the captivity of Zion, we were as them that dreamed. One translation says, we were as them that dreamed, it seemed so unreal. In other words, we didn't know how not to feel like captives. Or then over there in Nehemiah, the famous verse where it says, the joy of the Lord is your strength. What he's saying there, it's when Israel had just come out of captivity and they were rebuilding the temple, and it was a big day of rejoicing. And Nehemiah says, go home and have a party. He says, exchange presents. The King James says, eat the fat and drink the sweet. In other words, go eat party food is what he's saying. And it says the people burst into tears because they had been captives and slaves for so long, they didn't even know how to be happy anymore. And I think sometimes it's very easy to get addicted to drama, to chaos, to another story, like here's another thing that's going on, here's another thing. That's why I've been teaching about this for years, the power of a list. Don't make a, if you make a list, make it a positive list. Because if you say, well, first I lost my job last year, and then I got COVID, and then the dog died, and then this, and then this. If you keep talking about that list to anybody that will listen, the list is actually being empowered. The list takes on an energy of its own, and it starts attracting more of the same stuff to you. So the flip side of that is the praise reports. Again, let me tell you another great thing that happened. That's why I really try to live my life with, like, using virtual reality as an opportunity to create something to, like, I want to show off my life in the best possible light. I want to accentuate the positive things, because when you talk up the positive things, when you celebrate your life, when you praise your life, you attract more positive things to your life. I've been teaching this for years, but I really haven't seen this thing about prayer so strongly as I did this week. And the reason I didn't want to wait and share this with you Sunday is Jeremiah was right when he said the word of the Lord is like fire shut up in your bones. And if you have a word, you have to share it, or it will consume you. So I just thought I've got to go ahead and put this word out there, or otherwise it's going to become a negative thing in my life. So this is where I want to bring it to your personal life. For years, I've been saying, if you have people in your life that you use the word always or never, if you say you always do this or you never do that, you lock them into a stronghold, because that's your vision of them. Here they go again. They always do that. And this is particularly easy to do with people who are close to you, family members, friends, people who you are connected to, that they're just part of your world, and they have this predictable behavior that you disapprove of, and every time they do that thing or post a picture of it online or something, you immediately recalcify that thing. So there they go again. I hate when they do that. If you think about, and I've done this too, believe me, I know what I'm talking about. Some piece of gossip about a family member that you have shared 10,000 times. Like every time you and cousin so-and-so get together, y'all talk about aunt so-and-so. Because that's just what y'all do. That's your jam. That's y'all bond around your shared annoyance at her behavior. And I just want to suggest this to you. If you're in a pattern like that with somebody, now here they go again, they always do this, or they never do this, just try changing the energy. Try praying for them. I'll tell you this, if I go downstairs tonight and those people are fighting tonight, I'll just pray for them again. I'm gonna change that energy. I can't say that I can fix everybody's relationship with prayer, but these are the people that are in my metron. They're in my space. Metron is a Greek word for sphere of influence. So their activity is directly affecting me. So instead of me strengthening the energy on that negative thing, I change it. Prayer is about changing the energy in something. It's calling those things which are not as though they are. It's not restating the problem, it's speaking of the answer. It's like Paul saying, be careful for nothing, but by everything with prayer and supplication make your requests known to God. He says with thanksgiving. In other words, when you pray, if you pray the conventional God in the name of Jesus, then pray this way. I thank you that, fill in the blank. I thank you that such and such is going to happen. Once you get into the, God, don't you see what's happening to me? You're screwed. I mean, pardon my French, but I've got to get this across to you. Once you get into Job territory, you're in trouble. And all it's going to do is spiral downward. You've got to find some friends to pray for. The Lord will turn your captivity, or the universe will change the paradigm when you get outside of yourself. And I don't know why it works this way. It just does. It's the way we're all connected. So that's what I wanted to share with you. Okay? Whew. Somehow, God is my witness, I got it said. And I've got an emergency on another line. I've got to go check on that. And I just pray, when I talk to this woman about this money issue that she's calling me about, I believe that it will be resolved. Okay? I'm not even going to stress about that. I'm going to change. I'm going to tell you, I meet with my sons every Wednesday night, whoever's in town. This week, Jonah's just getting in off the road, and then Jared's going to, where is he going? Somewhere in Europe. I can't even remember where he's going now. But somehow, all three of them are going to be here Wednesday night, so we're going to meet. And I was telling the guys last Wednesday night, I said, now that I've had a kind of a milestone birthday, I'm really trying to create the template for what kind of old person I want to be. And I want to say as youthful as long as I can. I'll do what I can to make that happen. But I don't want to be in denial of my age either. And I want to become like one of these sages that lives up on top of a mountain. I mean, I'll still do it in the city, but you know what I mean. These kind of guys that young people make pilgrimages to, just to, you know, just to talk to, and they'll say, my life was changed when I was in his presence. I want to become that guy. I don't want to be old, bitter guy. I want to be the guy who learned some stuff over the years and can share sage advice with people. And so for any little thing that annoys me, even if something as recently as this technical issue with the streaming, I thought, I'm letting this get to me too much. I've got to change it. This thing will be resolved. A better time for this teaching will come about, and it's all good. It's all fine. And if I want to say more about it next Sunday, I can. But the trick to it, if you will, is getting the spotlight off of yourself and laying down your life for somebody else in some capacity, and that's what changes the energy. All right, so I hope to see you Sunday at Landmark Midtown Art Cinema, 11 a.m. If you want to sign up for Meditation Weekend 15, it's easy to find. You can do that. I do speak a blessing over you. If you want to support Metron, go to bishinthenow.com. It's totally self-explanatory. If you want to give to me personally, I've got all the cash apps. All right? I love you very much. Now put this word to work. You know it's the truth. I'll talk to you later.